Welcome to another episode of the AI Training Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Latimer, founder of Grateful AI. If you're looking to dive deeper into the world of AI and its transformative potential, you've come to the right place. For all our episodes, visit us at openaitraining.com, where we explore the cutting edge of artificial intelligence, bringing insights directly from the experts to you. Today, we have a real treat. We're joined by Josh Cavalier, the founder of joshcavalier.ai, a platform dedicated to understanding and leveraging the power of generative AI. With an impressive career spanning over 30 years, Josh has immersed himself in the world of generative AI, developing tools and workflows to harness its full potential. His extensive experience over the past few decades in creating educational content shines through in his commitment to effectively transfer knowledge and inspire change. Through his insightful content and a growing YouTube channel, Josh is on a mission to share his wealth of knowledge and experience. Whether you're a seasoned AI professional or just beginning your journey, Josh's insights are sure to enlighten and guide you through an ever-evolving landscape of AI. In today's episode, we dive deep into Josh's journey, exploring the nuances of generative AI and how it's shaping the educational landscape. From theoretical foundations to practical applications, get ready for an exciting episode filled with valuable insights and visionary perspectives. Stay tuned as we unravel the mysteries of AI with Josh Cavalier, here on the AI Training Podcast. Josh, welcome to the show. Thanks so much for being here. I hope you had a wonderful new year and excited to be here with you for the first interview of the year. Thank you so much.
I love it. Yeah. Happy 2024, Mark.
We're already off to the races and I feel like things are moving quickly and I'm excited to learn from you. And for those that don't know you, why don't you give yourself a quick introduction?
Yeah, I have been in learning development for 30 years. So I got my start in the early 90s doing e-learning development for a boutique e-learning firm here in Charlotte, North Carolina. After that experience, I started my own training business, Lodestone, and was one of the top Adobe authorized training partners in the United States. I had 5 locations, was spinning up education technology within corporations, mostly web-centric based implementation of training content. And then I wound that down and found myself back in corporate for 3 years as a learning architect, which was a fantastic experience. Got to really see what was currently happening in large organizations. It was for a $5 billion supply chain company. And I got to work on some very important projects, especially like implementation of Microsoft Teams during COVID, and also a lot of transformational type projects involving data and analytics, and spinning up our frontline sales team on those products. And then AI happened. And when having been in this space for so long, Mark, it was like one of those instances when I experienced AI for the first time. This is a week after ChatGPT was released. I knew it was different. And I dove in headfirst and got acclimated to prompting and what was happening in the background with the vector database and how all that was working. And I knew that this was going to show up differently and that generative AI was going to be a game changer, much in the same way that the personal computer or mobile phone makes a radical shift in the way that we consume and create content. And so in March of 2023, I went back in full time doing my own thing in the form of joshcavalier.ai, and here
love the domain.
Yeah, I grabbed that really quick. Yeah, exactly. What's interesting is, like, years ago, I was talking about educational video, and I thought that AI was going to show up in the form of vision analysis of educational video. Like, there was a lot of work that was being done at MIT and IBM around vision, like 5 or 6 years ago. And that was my take on AI, that we were going to have these applications that were going to be able to inspect video, see exactly what was happening in the video and recreate videos for us that was personalized for us. And now taking a look at what's happening currently, I think that's going to happen, but it's all going to be generated from new content or using diffusion models to create that video-based content as opposed to taking original video and reconstituting it. Man, that may still happen, but I have a feeling that there is going to be a massive shift in the quality of generative AI video to where we may not even have to go ahead and record original video to get the same effect.
Yeah, we're seeing it with audio, and video is usually just a bit behind, right?
That's right. Yeah, right before I took a break here at the end of the year, the last post I made on LinkedIn was a trailer for the Fantastic Four. And I had ChatGPT go in and write the script, which was perfect, but I needed a voice. I needed a voiceover for this dialogue. And the current...
So you created this?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Maybe you can put it in the link in the show notes. I can go ahead and give it to you. And one of the best sites or platforms for audio generation currently is 11 Labs. I absolutely love the platform. I have been using it. I train my own voice. I use it occasionally.
I'm also a big fan. It's incredible.
But one of the new features that they have is the ability for you to go ahead and cut your own voice or use some other voice and then use a model to go in and using the same tone and the same inflection, redo that voice. So for myself, I was like, okay, well, let me go ahead and cut this audio using my own voice and using the own inflection and adding some drama in there. But it's my voice. I mean, it's just okay. But then I can go ahead and select the voice of somebody that actually sounds like somebody who's going to be a voice on these trailers. And it is absolutely amazing. So you can take a look and a listen to this Fantastic Four video. But it just shows you how far we've come in just a year with the ability to go ahead and create movie trailers using 4-second clips at a time, showing movement and getting the emotion that's in there. Now, it's not perfect, but you get these videos from Pika or Runway, and it's just okay. There's a lot of deficiencies within it, but you can get camera movement. You can get some motion, and that's the worst it's ever going to get. So
right. This
time next year in 2025, I can't even envision like where it's going to be, to the point where individuals who may have not been used to creating video, or it was not approachable to them personally, either because of the gap in knowledge and skills required to create video, or there's barriers as far as they didn't have the right equipment or tools or anything like that. All that's going to be washed away, to the point where if you have a vision or you have an idea or a story, you're going to be able to visualize that and put that out there and do all kinds of different things from an educational standpoint. Now, on the flip side, we're going into an election year, and we're going to have to be mindful that of deep fakes and other ways that these technologies could be used. So it's going to be just a wild year, both from advancements in regards to education and what we're going to be seeing in regards to truth and journalism and content that's actually put out there in the wild.
Yeah, it's definitely a wild west of tools and how you connect them. And do you have the right chat stack? How are all your systems connected? Talking a little bit more about this video, you said you used 4-second clips. I know there's a few different tools that you probably use to stitch it all together. What are some of your favorites for video movement?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I have been using Runway Gen 2 with the motion brush, and this allows you to get some refinements in regards to what is stationary or what is moving within the frame. You can also prompt, and there are certain other techniques that you can use to get more specific type movement. I think we're going to see a maturation level occur within those models that are going to allow us to reduce the amount of errors that are occurring, like in the generation, and more realism happening with whatever content that you have within the frame. So Runway is like my favorite right now. Pika, the first version, it does well, but I think there's some leaders that are out there. Now, all of my runway type content begins with Midjourney 6. So I'm doing photorealistic images and then taking those photos, bringing them into runway, and then generating the 4 seconds. Now, you can go beyond 4 seconds, but you get a degradation in quality that occurs the farther out that you get with the generation of the video.
Yeah, I would love to explore runway more. It's not one of the tools that I've really dug into. So I appreciate the nudge to experiment. Sure. When it comes to e-learning, there's a lot of different software out there. What have you learned over the years?
Yeah, so when thinking about content creation, and again, I'm just going to keep it to e-learning because there's all kinds of different types of media that you can use for educational content. Everything as simple as like a job aid that's just text and images to interactive games. There's augmented reality, virtual reality. I'm just going to just focus in on e-learning for a second because I think it's with generative AI, it's the most attainable platform or way of producing content that the masses will be able to gravitate towards before we get into these advanced media types. But everything comes down to media composition or putting media together. Think about like PowerPoint. PowerPoint allows you to go in and take images, audio, video, text, and put it together into a presentation. So when we talk about e-learning, now we get into interactivity to where there can be simple quizzes or even, you know, clickable objects, and you're interacting with the environment to get an immersive experience to hopefully transfer knowledge or skills or change behaviors along the way. That being said, one thing I see happening, and this is with the large players in the e-learning space that have tools to create e-learning content, this would be Adobe and Articulate, is that they're integrating generative AI content creation within the application. So how does that show up? Well, Mark, let's say that do you have any hobbies?
I like to play the guitar.
All right. So let's say we want to go ahead and create a course on how to play a guitar, maybe just an intro and playing the guitar.
Perfect.
You'll be able to go into Adobe Captivate, which is one of their e-learning development tools. And I saw a demonstration of this in October. So this is not like just made up. I mean, I saw the demo of it live, and this is a function that they're working on currently. I don't know when they're going to release this, but I can see the writing on the wall as far as where things are headed. So let's say we want to do a basic course on playing guitar. I can go in and prompt the application to create an outline. All right, so good. We get a prompt, and then using either ChatGPT or GPT-4 or 3.5 or some other model in the background, it gives me an outline of learning basic chords or reading music or whatever the case may be. I can assess that. Hey, this looks great. Now go ahead and generate the course for me. And it will go in and take each one of those topics in the course outline and generate content for each slide. In addition to that, it will create media and I suspect eventually create interaction types. I didn't see interaction types. I did see images. And I did see text. Video makes sense. But here's a really cool thing. With the Adobe platform, they have access to Adobe Firefly, which automatically you can create images from that, right? Mm-hmm. So it takes the topic or the title of that particular slide, leverages it for the media that's required on that, and then it automatically lays everything out. And before my eyes, I saw this course being created automatically. And you look at that and go, whoa, that looks pretty good as it is. I probably just need about another 10 or 20% to go in and tweak this thing, and then we can call it done. And so I think that's where we're getting to a point to where we're going to see massive e-learning or learning-based content automation occurring. But of course, there's a human element to where the AI is only going to get you so far. And you need to, of course, validate the information with a subject matter expert. You'll need to go in and make sure that the content flows properly. So there's all that time right there. Now, it's quite possible that these applications could negatively impact the way that you develop, because if people lean on them too hard and they don't know their craft, they could create really horrible learning experiences to where they say, oh, well, it's done. I'm going to go ahead and check that box. And they release some type of learning content without validating the information, which could be really detrimental.
A lot of good points. And I haven't seen that Captivate demo, but I've seen what ChatGPT can do. It's kind of been a big sandbox for me, but I've used it as a tool to help me learn by having it quiz me and do what I can inside it. So connecting the dots, a company like Adobe certainly has the capabilities across the board to come up with something that's really in service to rapidly creating e-learning. And to your point, it's an idea I've heard before of this like 5-95 rule, where you're coming in for that first 5% and setting it in the right direction. And then you're coming in for that last 5% and making sure that it did as you requested. And maybe it's more 80-20, but there's definitely going to be some incredible advances for automating courses and having experts really focus on other aspects of the development.
Yeah.
Which of the areas after you kind of get the course going do you enjoy most in terms of your adding your polish and touch on the course?
Yeah, I think it comes down to just evaluating, thinking about your audience and the personalization that needs to go in there. Because if there's an automation and they don't really nail who the audience is, that's really where you make it shine, is by going in and understanding what are the motivations, what are the behaviors of your current audience, and then infusing the content that will speak to them, right? So that's the polish that I like to put on there. And I have a feeling that because of the current quality that's out there right now in regards to automation, that's what we're going to need. We're going to need that, like you said, the final 5% for sure. Now, what's interesting is if we play this out, and let's say that we get to a point where it recognizes who the audience members are and it just nails it. Like it just goes in and it creates just amazing content. At that point, now we're getting into autonomous agents that are creating this information to the point where we can have a performance issue that's been identified out into the field. Let's say that it's frontline sales and there's a new product that's going to drop next week and we want our frontline sales team to get after it and approach our customers on Monday. Well, the autonomous agent can go in, take a look at the audience profiles of frontline sales, can understand what the content is, and then generate individual courses or learning content for each salesperson that they consume on Monday morning, right?
Yeah. You
know, so we play all this out. At that point, I'm really orchestrating the content. I'm not necessarily creating the content. Now, obviously, that content needs to be evaluated or looked at by a human before it rolls out. We could even get to a point where it gets so good that the error rate of that content is less than 0.01%. Once that content is consumed, though, we have to take a look at the analytics. So if my criteria is how many additional sales of that product did we make for that week by Friday? How many of my frontline sales team completed the training? What did they do with the end quiz? What were the results there? How many times did they go ahead in the CRM system, contact a customer on this new product? What was their total sales of the new product by the end of the week, right? So we have all of these analytics, this data that we need to take a look at from that effort. Eventually, that will be automated. And so really, it's a matter of orchestrating and looking at dashboards and checking out performance results and seeing exactly, did we hit the mark with the AI-generated content?
Very interesting. A high-level overview of inputs and outputs and trying to, as you say, orchestrate the entire thing like a symphony, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Super cool. What other predictions do you have for the space as far as things you've seen, things you're excited about?
Yeah, one of the interesting things that I bumped into during the conference season in the fall here, Q4, we talk about generative AI. It falls in the buckets of text, audio, video, images, code. But one item that is very rarely talked about is biometric data, right? So information about what's happening to a human over time and getting that information and using it to generate additional content or results or reports or anything like that. And the people I was talking to do Department of Defense work. And so here's an example. If somebody is learning how to use a weapon or fire a gun or something like that, they can put biometric information or equipment on them to understand what's going on with their heart rate and how they're reacting to the situation. Now, that type of technology could also be used in the workplace in safety situations. So if we are putting somebody through a simulation, we can go ahead and get biometric information as far as like, where were they looking? What was their heart rate? How fast did they make that decision physically in that space? And I have a feeling that area is going to be massive. It's going to be a huge area of expansion when it comes to generative AI, just as an input type. Again, we don't get a lot of people talking about it, but the technology is out there. I think we're just waiting for it to hit coming out of the defense or usually for the government down to business.
It is something that doesn't get talked about a lot. In a business context, where do you see the inputs coming for measuring this kind of stuff? We all have smartwatches. What comes to mind with how we're tracking some of these more unusual business metrics?
Yeah, I mean, it could be watches, it could be rings, it could also be glasses, doing eye tracking and checking out what's happening with pupil dilation. Here's an interesting one. So, and when doing all that video work years ago, one of the authors I researched was Daniel Kahneman, Thinking Fast and Slow. It's a great book. And in the first half of the book, Kahneman goes in and talks about the research that he did in regards to solving difficult math problems. And so when you give somebody an easy problem and you test them or tax them, when it's attainable, like it's an easy problem and they're engaged, the pupil begins to open up, right? But as soon as you give somebody a difficult problem, like 47 times 23, right? If you try to think that in your head, there's a certain point where the body physically responds and the pupil will shut. Right? And immediately in the book, Kahneman talks about how he would call into the room where they're doing these math problems and say to the test subjects, hey, you just gave up. And they're like, how did you know I just gave up thinking about that problem? Because you physically just changed. People just shut. And so I think, and the same thing with willpower or calorie burn. If we have very difficult tasks ahead of us or these problems to where we have to do deep work and it makes your head hurt, right? That's calorie burn. And if you are not fueling your body properly, you may have a difficult time doing those tasks that day. Whereas if you fuel your body properly, you may have an easier day in front of you. And depending upon the tasks that you have scheduled, like this podcast, there's a different level that I need to be for this podcast than if I'm doing emails. So we could have AI take a look at your schedule and go, well, based upon your diet, this is the diet I recommend for you for the next day's work.
I love that. The idea of having your calendar controlled or at least suggested based on energy levels. That's really cool.
Yeah, and it goes with sleep patterns too. I mean, I do my best work is like from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. And so when I'm doing my writing, when I'm doing my deep work, I do that. And then I do a different type of work, like emails and things like that after 10. And I'm telling you, like after 3 o'clock, I'm just like, I'm toast. And I could take a break and then and pick up and do some other types of work in the evening. But that deep, best work is in the morning time for me. And everybody has a different schedule. Some people jam at midnight, 1 a.m. I'm already asleep 4 hours by then, so.
I'm on a pretty similar schedule to you, and I tend to agree that, at least for me, those morning hours are 10 times more productive than after 3 o'clock. Yeah. I similar got to do some exercise or something at that point because the energy levels are just already put in quite a long day and pick it up a little later for whatever else needs to be done. But yes, bringing that morning energy to a podcast is always great.
Yeah. So it should be interesting to see what happens with the biometric data. One other thing that I see is issues with copyright and how copyright's going to play out. We just saw the New York Times sue Microsoft and OpenAI about using all the New York Times articles for training data and those models. And it's going to be interesting to see where the courts land on these issues and if there's going to be any type of shift to accommodate AI within the copyright law, not just here in the States, but in Europe, other places. And so that's going to have a huge impact on how we use AI, is how the courts determine these lawsuits. And I think a lot of that's going to shake out in 2024.
Yeah, it's brand new, right? This is the news, and it's going to set precedents for a lot to come. So I know those kinds of decisions don't happen very quickly, but likely before the end of the year, we'll see what happens. I guess for now, the Wild West will continue, and people will use whatever data they can get their hands on to train their models.
Yeah, I think it's going to be fascinating as we see the progress of generative AI continue to exponentially just accelerate. Meanwhile, we still have old copyright laws. And even if there's new judgments, you could still have technology accelerate past those judgments to where we're still in the same situation. So hopefully if there's any kind of new perspectives or new laws around copyright, it's in consideration of future technology or what may potentially happen when we have a completely AI generated movie, let's say, put out by a studio. Like, who owns the rights to that? What is the copyright of that? Is it copyrightable? And I think that's one of the things that's actually holding back advertising and marketing and entertainment around these areas, is what happens if I put information or put some type of media out there that's fully AI generated, but I can't copyright it. That's a problem. That's like limiting what potentially could be put out there from an entertainment or even training and education standpoint.
I think it's going to be this, was it modified? Okay. That's how I feel it's going to shake out, is did you modify it? And even if it's changing a filter, you have to modify it in some way, then you can put your name on it. That's
right.
But because everyone's going to use it, in some way, there won't be a book that won't have some part of AI that gets written anymore. That's my belief. So we're going to assume everyone's using AI for everything, to do everything. So, but we still want to take some ownership, right? At some point, it's cool to say this was made with AI. And then other times it's just implied. So the faster we get to the implied, everything's AI, whether I'm actually here talking to you or not, I'm going to take ownership over this likeness of me showing up using my inputs.
Correct.
to get to this end result. And then if my eye starts twitching, well, that's on me for not really managing my tech to support that brand I'm trying to put out. But it's totally Wild West. And I think from an artistic perspective, because I'm a musician, I've started to learn more about these really interesting music tools. Suno.ai, have you heard of that one?
I have, yes.
Super interesting. And I'm trying to understand, okay, how do you take one AI tool like that? For those listeners who don't know it, it's very cool. You can prompt input and get songs that are people singing full. It's amazing. And then there's another one that I found called Moises, M-O-I-S-E-S, Moises AI. And this one can take any song input and it breaks down the layers of the music. So you can isolate vocals, you can isolate drums, guitar. And then for learning, you can slow the song down and just focus on the guitar riff if you wanted.
Wow.
So when you combine Suno that gives you original new music with something like Moises that you can break down the layers, you can start to do covers of AI-generated music that is original and have a lot of fun kind of back and forth connecting these tools, because isolated, they're all doing something really special or unique, or they wouldn't exist very long, right? So this, I feel companies like Zapier and these connective tissue companies are like perfectly positioned for how do I make ChatGPT work with everything, right? What's been your experience with ChatGPT? And I know you're kind of early user and it's gone through a couple different waves. Tell me what your experience has been.
Yeah, I think with ChatGPT, it was really a matter of understanding how to prompt and getting into the nuances of how GPT-4 works. When you have these research papers that give indication, if you are kind to the large language model or give it encouragement, it gives you better results, which is, it's fascinating. And we're still learning about how to interact with these platforms to get the best possible information back. And I have a feeling that as we continue to go into multimodal beyond text, like now we have DALL-E integration in with ChatGPT, we have yet to even do audio and video and biometric information into the GPT platform. So there's a lot of upside just with that model or how they're hooking up other models. I know that with Google Gemini, it is truly multimodal, that it is it's a single model that can do all forms of media. Sorry about that. That was my dog.
That's okay.
So it's going to be wild to see where things go with these big or large closed models and how open source or open models are going to be handled.
Yeah, I haven't experienced much use of Gemini yet, but looks very exciting. What's been your, have you found any interesting use cases with some of the experiments you've run there?
Well, when these new models come out, I have to choose my battles, right?
Yeah.
Because there's so much movement, there's so much happening, and in trying to wrap my arms around what it means to create educational content or content that's to increase human performance, I have to keep my eye on not just text, but what's happening with images and Midjourney and Leonardo and all these other tools that are out there for doing audio and video and so on. Now, when a new model like Gemini comes out, I am going to go ahead and test it. So I do have control statements or control questions that I use to verify and check and see, is this giving back a really good response?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I noticed with, and this is through Bard, because Google updated Bard to give you access to Gemini Professional, that was just okay. Like, it was a little bit better than GPT-3.5, but it wasn't as good as 4, at least in my experience with my control statements. Now, can that improve over time? Of course it can. And so we need to be nimble. And one of the things that I've been seeing with, at least with my corporate customers, is that the associates are getting access to AI, but it's through the protections and security of IT, right? And so it's interesting because in some instances, those customers are able to use models, but they don't know what those models are. Like, IT will give them access. They can go ahead and prompt, even generate images, but they don't know what models are being used. In other instances, you could actually hit a drop down and choose which model you want to use and then prompt against that. So yeah, it's interesting to see the difference between what's occurring within companies that are putting up these security options versus going out and getting access to the latest models and enhancing your craft or becoming a better version of yourself with the latest and greatest that's out there in the marketplace.
You think security is a bit of a hindrance for some companies that would like to move quickly, but are at the mercy of slow rollouts?
Yeah, totally. There are some industries, banking, finance, insurance, medical, or health. Those securities, they need to be at a certain level. And unfortunately, that is going to put barriers in for individuals who really want to ramp up how they use AI. They're really only going to be able to use what has been tested and accepted within their whole entire ecosystem, which, you know, who knows what that's going to look like if it shows up at all. Because there are some companies like, nope, no AI. I think that'll change over time once there's they work with their vendors on these secure platforms. But yeah, it's going to vary out there in the marketplace. Again, you're going to have this massive acceleration happening in the out there in regards to the quality of generative AI. But how fast are companies going to respond? They may give you access to certain models, but then all of a sudden there's a shift in the marketplace. And let's say that Google leaped GPT-4, but how long before you have access to that model behind the corporate firewall, right? So it's going to be interesting to see how all this plays out and how companies respond. And also as an individual in your own profession and what you're trying to do with your career, how much work are you going to be doing outside of that corporate governance in working with the latest and the greatest models that are out there?
Yeah, that's where I see if people can't use it, they're going to find a way. It's just, it's imagine not being able to use Google at work years ago.
Right.
You're on Internet Explorer, and if you got a phone, you're using Chrome or something.
That's correct. Yep.
So people find a way, and if the pull is strong enough. And I think with these AI tools, especially as a basic, a ChatGPT Pro or something, can be so powerful for productivity that if someone's using it personally, they're going to be asking the questions and trying to get that integrated somehow at work. And if you look at ChatGPT's enterprise level, there are a ton of companies that they've integrated some way. So they're definitely alleviating a lot of the concerns, but there are certain industries that are going to have greater levels of security, right? Like you talked about banking and things like that, that you got to be careful. But for the solopreneurs, these businesses that are nimble, there's not these security things. I feel the biggest challenge is not having enough time to both distill everything and then take action. So being very particular about which tools you're going to focus on that you think will be here. What is your tech stack and what are you committed to learning about, right? Because like never before, we're constantly learning. What are some strategies you have to stay updated on some of these, the latest and greatest?
Yeah, I mean, there are like a lot of thought leaders that are out there that are taking the time and doing some evaluations. And I try to keep my eyes and ears open to what's happening on social media, on X, on LinkedIn, TikTok. And typically like the cream rises to the top. Like you're going to actually see a lot of dots connected when there's a large amount of people trying to use the same tool to understand new features, new functions. How does it compare in the marketplace? And as long as you're in this constant state of learning and understanding what is the best tool to create text and audio and video, usually you get alignment as far as the top three tools within each of those areas. And then within those top three tools, there's usually leapfrogging that's occurring between them. Mm-hmm. And that's usually where I play. Well, I go outside of that occasionally, but I really don't have the bandwidth for that. I'm trying to understand how workflows are modified and adjusted within human performance just within these areas. So I like to go deep in the tools and try to build mastery around them as opposed to knowing just a little bit about each tool. Now, if you go to a site like futuretools.io that lists all the AI tools that are out there in the marketplace, you're going to find over 3,000 tools. Like, how do you even begin to, even if you sort by just video-based tools, how do you even begin to start to analyze, hey, is one better than another at a certain type of technique? Now, if you are doing a certain function, let's say that, like, for this podcast, like the edit of the video edit, there are specific plugins or AI tools that will look at who's speaking and do the automatic camera change edit over time. That's all. I mean, if that's what you're doing day in and day out is editing podcasts, that's an awesome tool. And that's something that you're going to lean on heavy. But if I'm just a casual video editor, I'm going to go ahead and definitely pick my battles when it comes to taking the time to learn about an AI-based video editing tool. And it's whatever the marketplace is showing is, you know, the most popular one. I think that's what we're going to see as we move forward.
Yeah, your analogy of the cream rises to the top, I think, is fairly apt. Every time you're listening to different people, if the same tools keep coming up, then time to investigate.
That's right. Yep.
And if you find that after a bit of use, you got to sign up for it and it becomes something that you regularly revisit, now you can figure out how you can maybe train on that. A great way to consistently up level is to teach what you're learning about. So I'm exploring Notion AI, and super cool. Have you given it a try?
Yeah, I use Notion for my prompt databases.
Nice.
So I have been using Notion, but I have not been using it for the AI yet. And I know it's there, but everything I use it for is more of a database-like functionality as opposed to a content generation functionality at this point. Now, what's interesting is that, like, when I evaluate tools, especially that are AI-based, it needs to be such an advantage when it comes to workflow automation that it has to, like, massively increase my productivity for me to shift to a new tool. Here's an example. There's one tool called castmagic.io.
Mm-hmm.
Castmagic.io allows you to take a video or an audio transcript and get that into closed captions. So it'll go in and create the transcript from the media. It'll generate closed captions, which by itself is great. And it uses AI to do those closed captions. And you can go in, you can tweak the closed captions and correct them, whatnot. But it's the next part or next functionality that really takes this tool over the top. Based upon the transcript, it will go in and provide automations through AI using GPT-4 in the background to create additional output types from the episode. So if you wanted to go ahead and create a newsletter, you want to go ahead and make a quiz, you want to go ahead and do an overview of the session, Castmagic in the background will generate all those outputs for you automatically.
That's cool.
Oh, see? I mean, that's where it's like, whoa, that's 1 + 1 = 3. Not only are you giving me the transcript and the closed caption file that I can download, but you're also taking the transcript and transforming it into these other forms of media that I can then leverage through social media or other platforms. And that's what I love, is that we're starting to see these maturations in workflows, and new tools are going to come out. And I think that's the reason why you have to keep your eye on the horizon as far as these tools and when people are talking about them, because you're going to have a vendor or company realize, hey, we could seriously impact the creation of X or build in productivity if we mash these functions together, some with human output or human created, which is what we're doing right now. We're recording a podcast, but then we add all these automations after the fact to speed production time.
Yeah, it's when you think about it like building blocks, and with this malleable connective tissue that even if they don't normally fit together, well, we can make them work, right? Can create these really interesting outputs, like this Castmagic could then plug into something else too. So the trigger, whatever that trigger is, can be a simple button click, but it can create so much that this is where I feel like AI is really the art of intelligence and how you glue that together and use it, because the tools are all the tools. It's like I was talking to someone, when you use ChatGPT, it's a completely unique experience to you, to anyone else, because of everything you bring to it. Your way of processing information, your way of thinking about things, your prompt construct, right? How nice right. you are. Remember we were talking about that, being nice to ChatGPT. So all of these things are completely unique. And unlike classic search, you kind of need a bit of an owner's manual to really use it like an expert, right? And it's not always obvious. You can ask it. Nothing, at least in my experience right now, performs just brute force using it and trial and error. Like most of the people that have been using it for the last year have thousands of prompts behind them, right?
Right.
That are know what's going on. And that's only from usage and learning in combination. But if you've only used it a couple times, the easiest way you can really accelerate is to just use it a lot more for everything. I keep getting surprised at what I can do because I throw things at it. Combining a PDF, not something I would ever think ChatGPT would even care to do, but sure, here's a downloadable. And it's, oh, well, all of those PDF tools that I would go to the website and kind of do some little editing, ChatGPT can do. So you kind of, in a way, it kind of brings in tools, right? Its new capability can now do something that maybe I don't need that other tool for anymore. Anyways, I get a little excited about this kind of stuff. What are you reading? Are there books that you are digging into right now or that you've read and you would like to share?
Yeah. So let's see here. Yeah. This one here, Data and Analytics from Megan Torrance. This is fantastic when it comes to learning analytics or data. You have to go ahead and analyze to create educational based outputs. And then from those, the analytics, once those, training experiences happen, that's one I'm reading currently. And then I have another one. That's a good one. Julie Dirksen. This is Talk to the Elephant and deals with behavior science and education and learning. So those are the two that I'm currently plowing through right now.
That's great. I love book recommendations, so I appreciate that. It's one of my favorite parts of the show. For those who'd like to learn more about you, I know you've got a few different courses and you work with organizations of different sizes. Can you share some of your contact information for people to stay in touch?
Yeah, you can either find me at joshcavalier.com or joshcavalier.ai. It goes to the same location. And I currently have a ChatGPT master class for learning and development professionals. It's asynchronous, so you can take it at your own pace. I also do consulting, webinars, and workshops. And right before we ended 2023, I did two back-to-back workshops. So those seem to be very popular. So if you have a team and you're looking to spin them up on generative AI and how that shows up, then I have a workshop for that.
Well, Josh, this has been so much fun. I've enjoyed learning from you, and I know that anyone listening or watching is getting a ton of value from the insights you've shared. So I appreciate you. Have an incredible New Year's, and may you and your family enjoy. And I can't wait to the next time we do this and how many things can change, right?
Right, exactly. Well, I appreciate it, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, happy New Year, and we'll talk soon.
All right, take care.
Cheers. Sun, stand beneath my toes.